Well, good morning, everyone. To those of you who are here and those of you who are online, welcome. If you're not sure where you are, this is Liminal Church of Ventura. I know it's been a wild weekend with Thanksgiving and everything, and I hope yours was wonderful. And I hope that you've recovered from your turkey coma and the craziness of putting together a dinner or getting to dinner with all the trimmings, whatever interesting challenges your families being with them or not being with them may present. So this morning may be a welcome break to you, a time to breathe, a time to relax, and perhaps a time to recover. This morning we begin the season of Advent. This is the first Sunday of the Advent season. This is a season of waiting and preparation, of mystery and of hope. And for some, a season of fear and of unknowing. And that is kind of our theme for this particular Advent season. We've entitled it, What Do You Fear? And we will use the poetry of Wendell Berry as an inspiration. So this morning I have the joy of combining a contemplative service with an Advent theme and previewing our Advent season. So it's going to be a little bit hybrid. I'll be a little more talkative than most of our contemplative services, and if you came here for peace and quiet, feel free to tune me out. If that's what your heart needs, it needs that more than it needs me. So do what you need to do. But to begin this morning, let's take a deep breath together, maybe two or three of them, and just be present here. It's an interesting thing, isn't it? And taking the moments to breathe in and out, we don't do that often enough, I think. And I notice when I stop and breathe that perhaps my shoulders have been here. And as I exhale, I realize how much tension I've been carrying. So in this moment of silence, consider, what are you bringing with yourself this morning? What things are you bringing into this room? And I like to use the metaphor of an imaginary shelf on the wall. And sometimes the heaviness that you bring in with you, or the joys that you bring in with you, whatever it is, perhaps you want to just put them on the shelf for a bit. And then at the end of the service, if there's something you still need to take back, take it off the shelf and take it home with you. Or maybe it's something you don't need at all, in which case the shelf is happy to hold it for you. So to begin our Advent meditation today, we will use a poem by Wendell Berry from his collection Terrapin, Poems by Wendell Berry. We've lit the first candle, and I'll read the poem to you. To go into the dark with a light is to know the light. To know the dark, go dark. Go without sight and find that the dark too blooms and sings and is traveled by dark feet and dark wings. In the beginning, God created everything, the heavens, the earth. And at first, the earth lacked shape and was totally empty, and a dark fog draped over the deep, while God's spirit wind hovered over the surface of the empty waters. Now, we don't know exactly what happened. Science will tell us one thing, and they guess pretty accurately, I imagine. The Bible teaches us basically the same thing, I think, with the understanding of no science when it was written. But it was dark, and there was chaos. Completely dark, and everything was in a whirl of chaos and of uncertainty. And God was in the darkness. Well, we all know what comes next in the biblical account, and God created light. But how long was the cosmos encased in complete darkness prior to the light? We don't know. That's a mystery. The Gospels open in the context of a similar theme. From the time the last prophet of God spoke in the book of Malachi to the time of Jesus' birth, there had been 400 years of silence from God. No messages from the prophets, no miraculous signs, pretty much nothing. Silence, darkness. What must it have been like for the Israelites who waited for the coming Messiah who would put all things right? They waited and waited and waited. And during the 400 years, Israel suffered greatly under the oppressive regimes of Babylon to Persia to Greece to the Hasmonean kingdom to Rome. And now they had King Herod, who ruled the Judean province under Rome, perhaps the darkest time for them all. And still they waited in silence, in darkness. Darkness and fear. Has God forgotten his chosen ones? Has he forgotten me? Fear met with silence. What must that have been like? Where their prayer, "How long, O God," was answered by a void and a stillness and darkness. Can you think of a time when God seemed silent to you? Where your prayers seemed to have gone unheard? This week's Advent meditation using Wendell Berry's poem, To Know the Dark, speaks of darkness, but surprisingly, he seems to find a beauty in the darkness. As we enter the Advent season, we recognize that the world may not feel very safe to us, and at sometimes it does feel quite dark, and hopeless even. In fact, most of us are afraid of something. of some things these days. Afraid of the future, afraid of the present, of what we see, of what we don't yet see, and a fear of the unknown. With that in mind, the teaching team has picked a theme for our Advent series, which might be a little surprising, but we've entitled it, What Do You Fear? As we explore our fears in the context of Advent, as I said, we'll use Wendell Berry's poetry to give us inspiration and wisdom of how to navigate the unknown. This isn't the seven keys from fear to faith. This isn't seven keys at all. This is learning to live within the mystery, how to navigate the unknown, and maybe find something of worth in the dark places and times that we find ourselves in. Now, we've just come from a series on the theology of song. And before I realized that this was going to be Advent Sunday, I had planned on picking Simon Garfunkel's song, 59th Street Bridge Song, talk about silence. And that isn't really appropriate for this morning's message. So I picked another Simon and Garfunkel song, The Sound of Silence. And it begins with these haunted words. Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk to you again because a vision, softly creeping, left its seeds while I was sleeping. And the vision that was planted on my brain still remains within the sound of silence. Paul Simon's words seem to indicate that darkness was a familiar companion to him, and even engages it as he lays out his vision or his dream that he found so disturbing. For our first meditation, let's take a few moments to consider, how do you image darkness? As a friend, as an enemy, friend, foe? What feelings stir in you when you're in the dark? Let's take a few minutes to consider that. Wendell Berry's poem begins like this. To go in the dark with a light is to know the light. Now, in our culture, we're used to elevating light over the dark, physically, metaphorically. We light up our rooms from corner to corner. We light up the outside, the streets. We bring flashlights with us when we go for walks at night. We value knowledge over the unknown. We value knowing over not knowing. We use light as a metaphor for something good and desirable, and dark as a metaphor for something bad and undesirable, evil, uncomfortable. So what does it mean to go into the dark with a light? Physically, it can mean bringing a light into the dark. For instance, when we're out in nature, we take the biggest flashlight we can carry. And when we do so, we see things mostly as we do during the day, and we lose our ability to see in the dark. We don't see the stars as clearly, and the light silences and scares away any birds and animals that might be out in the night. Light allows us to enter the darkness with the same amount of control or confidence that we have when we enter a sunlit room. I think we all know the feeling of walking into a dark room, flipping on the light switch, and there's a sense of, whew, you know, there's nothing hiding in, under the table or in the corners. Light gives us a feeling of knowing, that we know how things are, what the situation is, what we are to do. We stay within what we know. We're self-confident, self-assured, safe. If we think we know, if we think we know how to relate to our world and our situations, we go into the situation with the calm assurance that we have it all together. But in doing so, we may miss something special. When we are sure of our footing, we make assumptions. Our minds think they know. We lose the ability to see new possibilities. Andrew shared a poem with us last week, a T.S. Eliot poem by East Coker. And here's a section of it. I said to my soul, be still and wait without hope. For hope would be hope in the wrong thing. Wait without love, for love would be love of the wrong thing. There is yet faith, but the faith and the love and the hope are all in the wrong thing. The faith and the love and the hope are all in the waiting. Imagine a time, and perhaps you're in a time, where you are waiting. When you wanted, needed an answer, a direction, to be rescued, to be held, to know what your next step is. Allow yourself this morning to feel what surfaces in you when you remember such a time. Perhaps you resonated with the song that Andrew brought to us last week, Trevor Hall's words, I had to find my way through, meaning no one can do this work for you. There was no roadmap, no protocol, no fixed answers, no seven keys to perfection or happiness. During this time and during this next meditation, when you were in the midst of it and you didn't know your way through, what were your feelings towards the people around you? What were your feelings towards yourself? What were your feelings towards God? Let's take a few moments to consider those things. Well, what about the darkness? Wendell Berry's poem continues. To know the dark, go dark. To go dark means to acknowledge we don't know. We are not sure. We are not, most frighteningly, in control. But is there another side to darkness? In the Northern Hemisphere, The season of Advent includes the longest nights of the year. And sometimes we imagine the lights of Christmas as holding the shadows at bay. But when we are in the dark, if we are to know the dark and go dark, we must allow our senses to make out the dark feet and dark wings all around us. In this sense, a flashlight can limit our awareness. Consider this. If you go stargazing under a clear sky in city lights, you see very few stars at all. However, if you go away from the lights and the hustle and bustle of the city, go where it's dark and uninhabited by the things that give us a feeling of safety and security, looking up into the same sky, you see millions upon millions of stars. And if you hold your gaze for another 15 minutes or so, your eyes will adjust and you will begin to see even more stars. Stars behind stars that were completely invisible when you were safe within the city nights, lights. Ben and I went to Scotland just over a year ago. And one of the places we went was called Drimnin in Scotland. And if you've probably never heard of it because no one ever has. The reason we went there was because it was at the end of the world where nobody was. And the whole week we were there, I don't think we saw more than 20 people. So the nights were dark. Everyone would turn off their lights, and it was completely dark. So we decided we would go out stargazing one night, and so we did. And as we were looking up at the sky, the road was flat where we were, but then it dropped off. And some places it dropped off 6 inches, and some places a few feet, and some places quite far. And wouldn't you know, I stepped backwards and stepped right off the road and went whew. And I stopped my foot against a rock. And I had no idea whether the rock was on the bottom or if I moved my foot, if perhaps I had another 6, 8, 10 feet to go. Now, I'm in my 70s, and so falling, you know, that far isn't a good thing. And I couldn't really yell for Ben to come find me because it was dark and I didn't want him to, you know, I mean, I yelled when I fell. But I said, just wait a minute. Let me see where I am. And so then he was able to, by my voice, come slowly over, give me a hand, and pull me up. I still had no idea how far I'd fallen. But in the morning, we went and looked. And it turned out there was another foot to go, and I would have been fine. But there was the moment of being in the dark. My only security was the rock, that I had no idea how firmly it was planted or not planted. And having to rely on my senses to decide how to deal with it and if I was safe or if I was in real trouble. And as I was there, I realized, okay, I can still touch the top of the road. I can still scramble up. I still have this rock that seems to be holding, and I think I'll be all right. And I still have Ben with a hand who can pull. But my senses became more aware in the night. And it was a good reminder of just how tentative our security is. And it was also a reminder that there are real gifts in darkness. We learn to see on a real different level, a deeper level, see things that would normally pass us by. I'd walked that road several times that week. I should have remembered where I was, but I didn't because I paid no attention to it, thinking it wasn't relevant and I was looking at the trees. The darkness gives us an invitation to adapt. It makes us pay attention and it makes us slow down. To go into the darkness with the darkness allows us the gift of not knowing. Now, who thinks of that as a gift? But to meet what comes with curiosity, receptivity, and get to know what presents itself on its own terms. We may find something we didn't know and didn't know we didn't know. And that is transformative. Slow down. Listen. Learn. Barry's poem continues. Go without sight and find that the dark too blooms and sings and is traveled by dark feet and dark wings. What stirs in you when you imagine embracing not knowing, not being in control, not knowing your next step, not being sure of the outcome? Let's pause a moment and consider those things. I would imagine as I look around that as you considered those things, there isn't one of you who thought, oh, but this is fantastic. I love being in those places. How do I know that? Because I'm human just like you. And being not in control is one of the great hot buttons of my life. I'm an Enneagram 5. We don't do out of control. Well, in the many years, the 400 years, if you can imagine being around, well, you wouldn't be around for that long, but you think 400 years ago, who were our ancestors? How did they live? And in those 400 years where Israel waited and longed for the Messiah, the one who would come and make things right, who would wipe out their enemies and restore them to their place as God's chosen ones. Likely the scribes, the Pharisees, the Sadducees studied the writings and studied the signs and searched for an end to the silence and searched for hope and searched for deliverance. They searched their behavior and thought, if only I was different, then God would talk to me again. O come, Emmanuel. And ransom captive Israel that mourned in lonely exile here until the Son of God appears. There's a big breath before rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel has come. And that big breath lasted for 400 years. No doubt they imagined what the Messiah would be like, what the Messiah would do, and how their lives would benefit once the Messiah would come. No doubt. No doubt at all. They were certain. But the problem with certainty is that it closes our minds to anything that doesn't fit what we're certain about. It blocks our eyes from seeing anything that we don't expect to see. And so it was in Bethlehem, I would imagine. They all knew the words of the prophet Isaiah. Now, this is a long passage, and I didn't type it out, and I'm sorry for that, but it was long. So, listen. Then the Lord looked, and it displeased him that there was no justice. He saw that there was no one, and was appalled that there was no one to intervene. So his own arm brought him victory, and his righteous acts upheld him. He put on righteousness like a breastplate and a helmet of salvation on his head. And he put on garments of vengeance for clothing and wrapped himself in fury like a cloak. So he will repay according to their action, anger to his enemies, retribution to his foes. To the coastlands he will render their due. So people will fear the name of the Lord from the west and his glory is from the rising of the sun. For he will come up as pent-up stream that the breath of the Lord drives along. And a redeemer will come to Zion. To those in Jacob who turn from transgression, says the Lord, as for me, this is my covenant with them, says the Lord. And my spirit that is upon you, and my words that I've put in your mouth won't depart from your mouth, or from the mouths of your children, or from the mouths of your children's children, from now on and forever. Arise, shine, for your light has come. The glory of the Lord has risen upon you. For look, darkness will cover the earth, and thick darkness is over the people, but the Lord will arise among you, and his glory will appear over you. Nations will come to your light, and kings before your dawn. Lift up your eyes, look around. They all gather together. They come to you. Your sons will come from far away, and your daughters will be carried on the hip. Then you will look and be radiant. Your heart will swell with joy because the abundance of the seas will be diverted to you, and the riches of the nations will come to you. So here's what they expected. They expected a conquering hero. They were sure of it. No doubt, Isaiah's prophecy said it quite clearly. But maybe that certainty got into the way because they didn't get what they felt they had been looking for and promised. Instead, what did they get? A helpless baby born to an unwed mother in a stable. Honestly, who would have recognized the infant Jesus as the fulfillment of their longings? Mary did. Joseph did. The shepherds did. And a group of astrologers from the East did. The meek, the lowly, the ones who spent time in quiet contemplation, the humble, the outcasts, they saw and they believed. But those who sought him with intellectual pride missed out on the whisper that shattered 400 years of silence. They did not hear. They did not see. To go in the dark with a light is to know light. To wait with expectations and confidence in what we are waiting to see is to know what we already know. To know the dark, to go dark without any preconceived notions or expectations, to go without sight, to embrace mystery and certainty, and enter with open hands, hearts, and minds into the unknown. Maybe you'll find that the dark, too, has gifts to give. Gifts of blooming, gifts of singing. And maybe you will find other travelers with similar dark feet and dark wings to companion you on the journey. Look, maybe today you're filled with the joy of the holidays and a bit too much turkey. Well, save these thoughts for another day or share them with someone else who's going through a dark time. Or maybe you're in the midst of darkness right now and don't know if there's a way out for you. How I wish I had 7 keys to get through this to hand you. But the only way out is through. Step by step, with an openness and a receptivity to waiting and looking for what the uncertainty and deconstruction might have to offer, that certainty and knowing do not. You may just find that what you need in the dark, you may just find what you need in the dark. And while it may be entirely different from what you expected or thought you knew, it may offer a greater value in its own terms. Transformation cannot take place in one who knows all the answers, or in one who does not see his or her own need to be transformed. And don't we all need that? I was saying this morning that deconstruction, which is an overused term now, I've come to believe that that should be the daily posture of those who follow God, because we will never know it all. We will never have it all together. There will always be things that don't fit with who Jesus is. There will always be things that we should embrace that we are not already embracing. Deconstruction isn't comfortable, but it's the way of life. See, God is, whether seen or unseen, equally present in both light and darkness. And God is equally with you in light and in darkness. And God equally loves you in light and in darkness. Go without sight and find that dark too blooms and sings and is traveled by dark feet and dark wings. Find your way through to the fruitfulness of the dark that is all around us, and see it for what it is, in full bloom. God of light, God of darkness, help us to know the light and also know the dark. Awaken us to your presence, even in unexpected ways and at unexpected hours. Open our ears to hear your whispers. Open our eyes to see beyond sight, to recognize the deepest shadows of despair within us and around us, and kindle a flame of hope in what may be, not just in what we hope for. Help us to experience your presence and your love in equal amounts, whether in the light or in the dark, the love that drives out all fear. Help us not to settle for what we know and see, but to open ourselves to your transforming touch within the mystery of the unknowing. As is our habit on contemplative Sundays, of which this was sort of one, we have communion together. I was thinking this morning that it's really easy to approach communion as just something that we do. But I think it means something, and I don't know what it means for you. I'm not 100% sure what it means to me. But I think there is a mystery in it worth exploring. And so, when you take the bread this morning, let it be something more than bread or a cracker. Let it be symbolic of what you know and what you don't know. Allow the mystery to be the mystery. It's in good hands. God reveals what God reveals when God reveals it. One of my least favorite phrases in the Bible is in the fullness of time. Because in the fullness of time, in my timeline, have yet to coincide. Bread is a complex thing. There are a lot of elements that go into it. A lot of interactions that happen when it's being baked. There's mystery in bread. There's mystery in how we take it into our bodies and it becomes part of our strength. The same with the juice. This morning when you come for communion, I want to invite you into the mystery of we don't know why it was that Jesus spent the last moments with his disciples breaking bread, having wine, and saying, remember this when you do it and think of me. We don't know what mysteries happen within our spirits, but I think something may. So this morning, come with curiosity. Come knowing that perhaps you're just getting up and doing it because everybody else is. That's okay. God's going to meet you how God wants to meet you. When the bread was broken, there's a mystery of how it's going to tear. This was meant to be equal halves. It went its own way. There's mystery. If you saw Jurassic Park 1, chaos theory, it's right here. Let communion mean something to you this morning. Take it with the understanding that Advent, a time of preparation, a time of ending of 400 years of silence, that's a mystery too. Why not 401 years or 399? There's so much we don't know. And if we enter it curiously, there's so much we may learn. Now, here at Liminal, if it wasn't already clear, all are invited to the table. So when you're ready, please walk up the two center aisles. Can there be two center aisles? This bothers me every single time. That aisle and that aisle. Take a cracker or a piece of bread and a cup. The usher will pour the juice into the cup and then use the outer aisles to return to your seat. In your own time, when you're ready, eat the cracker and drink the juice. Take a moment to imagine, what does it mean for you? Is it a sacrament? Is it just something you do because it's a contemplative Sunday and it's there? Is it something that's deeply meaningful or something that used to be deeply meaningful? But with things that have happened to you within or without the church, it has ceased to hold meaning. Consider those things and be present with how you actually feel about it. If it is difficult for you to walk up to the front, raise your hand and I or one of the ushers will come serve you directly. We want this to be a time where everyone is able to partake. So Jesus, on the night when he was betrayed, took bread, and when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, this is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me. In the same way, after supper, he took the cup, saying, this cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this whenever you drink it, in remembrance of me. So if the ushers can come forward. And when you're ready, come to the table. To go in the dark with a light is to know the light. To go in the dark, to know the dark, go dark. Go without sight and find that the dark too blooms and sings and is traveled by dark feet and dark wings. This is likely not the most happy peppy Advent sermon message that you've ever heard. And perhaps things have stirred in you and you would like some prayer. We'll have a couple people in the back who are available to pray with you if you need it. As we enter this Advent season, our prayer is that you will come to know the fears that you carry, that you will see them for what they are, and that you will see hope, that although we may not have control, there is one who does. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you and give you peace. Amen. That concludes our service. If you would like to spend some more time in quiet meditation, feel free to stay, linger as long as you want. We do ask if you want to have conversation with people. Maybe go out into the coffee bar or into the foyer. Be blessed, one and all.